Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Akron. You've tuned into WGXC's morning show. This morning, WGXC's Mayuka Fujino speaks with Larry Fetterman, a former Audubon Society education coordinator and president of the local Audubon chapter, Northern Catskills Audubon, about local birds. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network. On air, in air, waves controlled. Blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Hello, you're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jane Scarpolino of New Haven, Connecticut. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Tuesday, August 1st. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Raga Justin reports for the Times Union that the Public Employees Federation, New York's largest public sector union, voted late last week for a new three-year contract with 3% raises annually for thousands of employees. The promised raise will affect over 50,000 of the professional, scientific, and technical state workers, including nurses, social workers, doctors, engineers, and parole officers that the union represents. The Public Employees Federation also secured 12 weeks of fully paid parental leave in the deal. Governor Kathy Hochul approved, saying, quote, "This contract fairly compensates the hardworking members of the Public Employees Federation who provide critical expertise to benefit New Yorkers each day. I'm grateful to PEF President Wayne Spence for his partnership to help get this agreement finalized and to ensure that New York workers' pay and benefits reflect their important contributions to our state," unquote. The current shortage of employees and more than 26% of the state government workforce eligible for retirement within the next 5 years means many others could benefit from the contract since the state will have many job openings. Read more about this story in the Times Union. William J. Kemble reports in Daily Freeman that Saugerties Town Supervisor Fred Costello says the state attorney general's report that recommended firing a Saugerties police officer for sexual harassment played a role in putting Chief Joseph Sinagra on paid leave. The town board voted late last week unanimously to put Sinagra on paid leave while they investigate an unknown issue, but did not say what that issue is. But on July 28th, Costello confirmed that the Attorney General's report has a role in the situation, saying, quote, "Yes, I feel it is. We don't know until we get it, though. For now, we have more questions than answers," unquote. The 15-page report from Attorney General Letitia James' Law Enforcement Misconduct Investigative Office, released July 7th, found that Saugerties Police Officer Deion Johnson, quote, engaged in a pattern of misconduct involving inappropriate behavior of a sexual nature, unquote, and called on Saugerties to, quote, terminate him for these actions, unquote. The report also said that the police department's, quote, disciplinary actions did not match the gravity of the misconduct, unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And Michael Woyton reports for Patch that the Ulster County Fair opens August 1st. That comes just after the Greene County Youth Fair closed in Caro and a few weeks before the Columbia County Fair opens in Chatham. The fairs all offer a variety of animal exhibitions, amusements and rides, and performances. The Ulster County Fair has Lee Greenwood and the Kentucky Headhunters performing, and the world's smallest rodeo, and a fireworks display on August 2nd. Most days it is open from 10 a.m. until 11 p.m., except for closing day, August 6th, when it closes at 8 p.m., and opening day, when the hours are 4 to 10 p.m. Read more about this story in Patch, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, August 1st. Local early morning temperatures range from 49 degrees in Tannersville to 56 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 69 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium. It'll be foggy this morning. Driving may be slowed down a little bit. Today will be pretty darn nice and it will start cool this morning. Turns comfy by 9 a.m. Skies will be mostly sunny. There are no UV warnings out, so light protection from the sun is all that is needed. Don't forget those sunglasses. A high of 74 happens at 2 p.m. and lingers most of the afternoon. Overnight, we drop to 53 beautiful sleeping degrees. Tomorrow looks pretty good, too. Clear, dry, high of 77 at 3 p.m. 67 degrees overnight takes us into a possibly rainy Thursday with a high of 78. Friday, still rainy with again a high of 78. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 2:51 a.m., low tide at 9:52 a.m., high tide again at 3:26 p.m., and low tide once again at 9:56 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 76 degrees. There's a slight adjustment there. Had to go off of the Poughkeepsie sensors because the one in Skodak seems to have kicked the bucket. Today's tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 8:02 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:45 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances have jumped to 10%. Plasma winds will be slow at 372 kilometers per second with an average density of 6 protons per cubic centimeter. The radiation storm seems to have taken a break, which gives us space from between that and the coming coronal mass ejection. And if that Hadouken happens to hit us squarely today, that could cause some geomagnetic unrest. G2 class storms so far have been predicted, and auroras are possible. The current sunspot number is 197, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
Howdy, New York.
New York, New York.
New York, New York, you high and mighty, bright and shiny, fabulous place, New York.
New York, New York.
Hey, watch where you're going.
I'll watch where I'm going in New York.
New York, New York.
Ooh. The Empire State Building. Wow, it's tall.
The tallest building in the world.
The many bridges, they feed the city.
Bombs and planes, tunnels and trains.
It's birthday party time.
Madison Square Garden. It isn't square and it isn't a garden.
Here you're right, it's misleading.
Grand Central Station, the city's train hub.
Choo-choo! Hello, hi, how's it going? Where are you up to?
Choo-choo! Choo-choo! Africa, Antarctica, Asia, Australia, Europe and the Americas.
The United Nations. For our future.
World peace, the choice is ours. Let's make it happen.
I'm riding the subway beneath the city.
It's underground.
Hey, is this going uptown?
I'm in the shower getting clean. Happy birthday, Joe.
I never had pizza.
One slice, please.
One slice.
Pizza's delicious. I never knew.
I feel alive.
Pizza!
The Statue of Liberty. Liberty!
The Statue of France. They're brighter than your pants.
It's Joe's birthday!
Happy birthday, Joe! Armani or Alfani!
I'm inside a taxi. I'm on my way.
I'm on my way!
Ah, Central Park. I'm almost there.
I'm almost there!
This is it. I'm finally here. I'm finally here.
Party time, and that's enough to
get. Look out!
My name is Mayuko. Frequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our own neighborhoods. The guest's name is Larry Fetterman, a former Audubon Society education coordinator and president of the local Audubon chapter, Northern Catskills Audubon. Larry is also a lifelong musician, and in this interview, he discusses his music career and how his musical ears help him observe the pitch and intervals of bird songs. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Thanks for tuning in. This is Frequency.
Could you introduce yourself as a birder first?
Sure. My name is Larry Fetterman. As a birder, I've always been interested in birds. My dad got me interested when I was growing up in Queens, right near the old World's Fair site. We would go on walks around the lake, and I was probably 6, 7, 8 years old, and not much of a birder back then, but I really embraced it. I really love the idea of flying, and birds embody that. So I can live vicariously through their freedom. I've been watching and listening to birds for all of my life. When my daughter was 3 years old, we were driving across the Rip Van Winkle Bridge. I was taking her to swimming lessons, and she looked out the window and said, "Daddy, what's that big bird flying next to the car?" And it turned out it was an adult bald eagle. So this was 30 years ago. I had not done too much birding over the course of years before that, but a light went off in my head and said, I've got to get involved in birding somewhere somehow. So I found our local Audubon chapter, Northern Catskills Audubon, and I joined. And within a very short amount of time, I was elected to the vice president seat, the role, and then that turned into the president's role. And I'm still the president of our local Audubon chapter. It's approximately 400 members. And I really take advantage of the 400 member number when I write advocacy letters to our legislators. And I can say, you know, on behalf of the 400 member Northern Catskills Audubon Society, this is how we feel. We'd appreciate your support. So over the last 30 years working with Audubon, I was able to take my volunteer role and I turned that into a career for over almost 16 years. I got hired by Audubon New York, the state program of National Audubon, and I was the assistant warden and education coordinator for three sanctuaries. One is the Ramshorn Livingston Sanctuary in the village and town of Catskill. Then there are two across the river, one in Columbia County, Rhinestrom Hill, and one in Dutchess County, Buttercup Farm Sanctuary. And I started off doing all the mowing, trimming, landscape work, and things that you would associate a warden type work to do. And also I created education programs, and I designed them and ran them for any age group from preschoolers through college students and for adults. And I'm still doing my bird work after my Audubon career. And I'm doing bird consulting and also leading bird walks, which is where I met Mayuko. And that's my my birding life.
Great, thank you. What I learned about you, in addition to being a birder, is you're also a musician.
Right. That I started playing guitar. Guitar is my principal instrument. I started playing guitar when I was 13. And that's, oh my gosh, over 50 years ago. And what brought me upstate was a band that I was in. Six of us decided to move out of New York City, and we moved up to the New Paltz area in 1973. And we thought we were going to be the next, the band, you know, the band out of Woodstock. We were in a one-room house. It was a small house. It was painted yellow. So instead of big pink from the band, we were little yellow. But unfortunately, our style of music did not play well in the immediate area. We were a country rock band, which in the early 70s wasn't the most popular genre. So we couldn't get gigs at the rock and roll places. We couldn't get gigs at the country places because we were too country or we were too rock and roll. The band lasted 4 months. And five out of six moved back down to the New York City area, and I stayed upstate. And I found it was easy for me to get gigs playing country music, playing straight country music. And I relearned a lot of the music that I was playing in my six-piece band that I didn't realize was from mainstream country artists like Merle Haggard and George Jones, Loretta Lynn. But because I had the background of playing these songs in a semi-stylized manner, I was able to get gigs with different country singers in Ulster County and Dutchess County. And I've been playing country rock, and it's been a career. I've been able to do that, and I still play. I'm in the local five-piece country band called Thunder Ridge. One of the singers and I put together a duo right before COVID hit. We call ourselves Gray Matter. Obviously, it wasn't the best time to try to embark on a new musical endeavor, but we're picking back up again, and we're gigging. And I just started with a new outfit, a woman who has a seven-song CD of all her material, Laura Zarugian. We have several gigs coming up. So I've got three projects going on right now, music-wise.
That's great. You pronounce her name Zarugian?
Zarugian, yeah.
And she has some Armenian background?
Yes, yes. She's of Armenian and Egyptian descent. She lived in Armenia for a little while. I'm trying to get back to her roots. But I think she was originally from the Boston area, and now she's based in Dutchess County.
You said there was a Labor Day weekend has something happening.
Right. She's going to be having a CD release party on the Saturday of Labor Day weekend.
And you are playing with her.
Yes.
That day. And where is this location?
It's going to be at on her property. They have a barn that's been redone. Yeah, so it's going to be a big hootenanny shindig at her place.
You still play guitar, and you started, you're self-taught.
I'm self-taught. I took some lessons right in the beginning. You know, we're going back to, 1966 or so. I took guitar lessons from a folk singer who had a big book of folk songs, and he would say, what song would you like to sing? And then we would learn the chords based on songs that were familiar to me. And then I went on to my first band. We were all learning our instruments at the same time, and I fell into the role of more of a lead guitar player. So I was the one playing melodies, and to this day I play guitar everywhere. Whenever, if we're sitting around the living room in the evening watching TV, I have an unplugged electric guitar, and I just run my fingers playing along with the TV themes, with movie themes, with commercials, and it's ear training, and it's just keeping my fingers limber, but it's also keeping my ears open and listening to different things.
Hmm. Were you growing up listening to country music? Is that how you...
Absolutely not. my first bands in Forest Hills, we got into, which was crazy, we got into West Coast rock and roll music. We were never into the Beatles, never into the Rolling Stones.
Mm-hmm.
We were the original Deadheads.
Oh.
I listened to Grateful Dead, New Riders of the Purple Sage. And then going off from the New Riders country aspect, we get into Graham Parsons, Emmylou Harris, Flying Burrito Brothers. And then on the rock and roll end, you had Buffalo Springfield, we had the Byrds. So that was the country aspect, but our gigging was few and far between in Queens. We were very young, but also we were into improvisational music. So listening to the Grateful Dead, that's who took us on our journeys. At one point we had a female singer, so we were able to do Jefferson Airplane music. And none of us had ever been to California, which was very interesting. But we somehow fell in love with that style and that freedom. And as I said, after the band moved upstate and disbanded, then I went in that more traditional country direction. But my roots, I love throwing rock and roll melodies in country songs. And it's funny how when one thing I used to do, there's the famous song written by Willie Nelson, Help Me Make It Through the Night. And I play the melody of Procol Harum's Whiter Shade of Pale as the solo section in the song Help Me Make It Through the Night. And if people are really listening, mm-hmm. which there are a few people here and there who are that into it, they'll come up and say, did I hear something different than Help Me Make It Through the Night in that song? Yeah. So there's always that the upbringing and my background of rock and roll in my country playing.
You're listening to Bequency on Waveforms WGXC. If you're just joining us, we're listening to my interview with Larry Fetterman, a former Audubon Society education coordinator and president of the local Audubon chapter, Northern Catskills Audubon.
So, like you said, I met you at the bird walk at Ramshorn Livingston. What I loved about your bird walk when I participated was you really let us take a long pause, like a really long pause. You really help us really listen by giving us a guidance as to, what kind of sound or which direction we should be paying attention to. And I was wondering if this attentiveness came from your experience or expertise as a musician, or do you think it's the birds that kind of train your ears and be more attentive? And I thought this could be a chicken or egg kind of question, but I was curious about that.
Well, definitely they go hand in hand. I think being a musician and having a trained ear for pitch, for intervals, definitely helps with learning birdsong. And one thing that your listeners should be aware of, that we're calling what I do birding and not bird watching. Because I do, when I'm doing my consulting bird surveys or on our bird walks, we're doing as much, if not more, bird identification by ear, especially after the first few spring walks that we'll do, when the trees are leafing out and it's making it much more difficult to see the birds up in the canopy. We can usually identify what birds are in an area by their songs. So then that's why we call it birding and not just bird watching, because we're using our two senses for that. So having the musical ear, and I'm a non-traditionally trained musician. I read music very, very slowly. I learn songs by ear, and that has definitely helped with birdsong, because there's a lot of similarities when you're listening to a musical passage, similarity to what a bird is singing. You can hear if the song is rising in pitch, is it staying on one note, but different rhythms. So definitely, one definitely helps the other. I don't know how much birding has helped my music ear, but definitely being a musician, and now that I've been doing the bird surveying and leading the walks, especially since, you know, working for Audubon, it's definitely helped me hone in on what we're listening to. And what we're trying to listen for is not just what the bird song, the notes are, but we're listening to tone, we're listening to rhythms. So when you listen to a symphony, it's like listening to what instrument is playing that part. Was that an oboe or was it a bassoon? Was it a flute or was it a piccolo? Very similar sounding, but subtle differences. And we can use that when we're trying to identify birds. We're listening to a tufted titmouse. Let's say it has a sweetness to it, but then we hear a Carolina wren that sounds very similar. Well, we're going to take the rhythm of a titmouse, which is a two-syllable song, Peter, Peter, Peter. And compare that to a three-syllable Carolina wren, who typically sings tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle. Tones are very similar, but we'll use the word sweeter when it comes to a Carolina wren. So you're going to take a couple of aspects to differentiate between those two. And as you said, on our bird walks, we definitely need to pause. You know, we are very, very gregarious and friendly group on our bird walks, especially at Ramshorn. And it's as much a social gathering time as a birding time. So it's really important for us to stop the chatter and the socializing and take the time to listen. And then we can hear, a lot of times we'll hear offset bird songs on one side of the trail, one song on the other side, and we can compare, okay, listen to the left. Here we have a cardinal. Now listen on the right. Hear the difference between that and the tufted titmouse.
You know, it always makes me happy when we take that pause. Also, somehow, when you meet other people, usually it's to like socialize through conversations, as opposed to what we do, like just standing in the between trees and just like stand there still and just be quiet and just be there together, and I find it really comforting.
Yeah, yeah, a couple of expressions come to mind. One, we have to take the time to stop and smell the roses. So instead, we're taking time to stop and listen to the sounds around us, which aren't, you know, depending on if it's early in the spring, it's not just birds. We're going to hear frogs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, but there's also the socialization aspect of it, because you're with like-minded people. And, you know, obviously I don't run the walk where there's absolutely no talking. You know, we've got to have that time for, yeah, oh yeah, I just heard the Carolina Wren. And I remember, oh, just the other day I was in my yard and I heard the Carolina, you know, then the other person, I thought I had a Carolina Wren. It turned out it was a tufted titmouse, and it finally came out. And so you need to have that connection as well. But you're absolutely right. People going through life, especially in our instant gratification style nowadays, we want, you know, you want to talk, you want to communicate. So it's very important to get out. And that's where nature is such an important aspect in people's lives that, unfortunately, many people, or most people, don't take the time to appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
When going back after September 11th, after that hard, horrible day, Audubon opened up all its sanctuaries. Any places that had an admission fee, they didn't charge fees for a couple of weeks after, just to let people get out. And the feedback that we got from people who said, you know, they weren't traveling, they weren't flying, they weren't able to get away, but they were able to go in their neighborhood or go to parks, preserves, sanctuaries, and just breathe. And it was a definitely a very, very cathartic experience for many people. And for many people, it's the first time that they actually went out of their homes. And they weren't just going to the car, going to the, from the home to car to work, home to car to school and back again. They were getting out and doing something that they weren't familiar with. Really appreciated that time out in nature.
So for listeners to, you know, join those walks where you can not only learn about birds, but also in a very relaxing, natural way to connect with other people, I really recommend participating in bird walks. And so how can listeners find information on the bird walks that you lead in future? Is there any website or newsletter that people can subscribe to?
My newsletter is just a digital, it's an email list that people can send me an email, and then as events are taking place, or my whole schedule, usually in the early spring, I send out the schedule for the bird walks at Ramshorn and other places. So I can give you my, or Miyuka, you can share the email address with readers.
Okay.
Also, I have a Facebook page. I'm more active on Facebook than I am on Instagram, but I typically will post activities on Facebook, usually a week in advance. I'll put up where the gigs are. Now it's getting complicated because I have the three different band situations. But Facebook is a good place to look around and see what's going on.
So that would be the best place to find your music shows as well.
As well, yes, yes, yep, yep, yep. The birding activity is coming to a slow stop now that the breeding season is just about over. So the birds aren't as active, and they're more interested now in feeding and getting ready for their fall migration.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no upcoming bird walks or talks for the rest of the year.
So it'll be the next year, next spring.
Next spring, yes.
Okay.
And typically the walks start in mid-April, and they go 6 or 7 weeks. And I usually run the walks on Fridays at the Ramshorn Livingston Sanctuary. And I have a couple of places where I do my traditional annual walks, the Mountaintop Arboretum up in Tannersville, and some other places as calls come in.
I'll make sure to announce that in the maybe late winter or early spring on the radio show. Yeah, when it comes to that season again.
Terrific.
What was your last exciting bird encounter in the Hudson Valley?
I get a similar question all the time. What's your favorite bird? That's like asking a parent, who's your favorite child?
That's a very good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a difficult question to answer. There are spark birds. That's the bird that got people or gets people involved in birding mm-hmm. initially. But for me, the most exciting. So our littlest falcon, the American kestrel, we've noticed, or I've noticed over the last 25, 30 years that their numbers have been declining. And my concern hadn't been raised by the greater ornithological community until fairly recently. So kestrel has always been a favorite bird of mine. And the last exciting encounter I had was while doing this last project for Hudsonia over in Dutchess County. After 5 out of my 9 contracted survey days, I finally had a kestrel fly over. And it was actively hunting a field. These are birds of grasslands. Their primary food is grasshoppers and small rodents. So to me, that was very exciting. And probably if somebody saw me out in the field, they probably thought there's some lunatic out there, because I'm very vocal. And I probably exclaimed, yes, I can't believe it. Finally. Yay. Hooray.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. And
I appreciate you reaching out. This is great. I thank you so much. It was great meeting you at Ramshorn.
Yeah, and I hope to come back next spring for the walks again.
Thank you.
That was from New Zealand band The Clean. The song was called Point That Thing Somewhere Else. It was from 1986. And this next song from 1995 sounds remarkably like it. It's from Yola Tengo. And it's called Flying Less Than Hot Chicken Number 1.
Let's go. Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
But if we elect Donald Trump, we are willingly giving Joe Biden 4 more years in the White House, and America can't handle that.
Over the weekend, former Republican Texas representative and presidential hopeful Will Hurd was booed at a dinner hosted by the Iowa Republican Party after he said Republicans will lose the 2024 presidential election if former President Donald Trump were to become the Republican nominee. During an interview with NBC's Meet the Press, Hurd said it's possible for a third-party candidate to win and added he hasn't ruled that possibility out for himself. 2024 Republican presidential candidate and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was in New Hampshire on Monday and laid out his economic plan, which takes aim at China, taxes, and regulations.
Success for this country is attainable. Freedom that we've been bequeathed by prior generations is worth fighting for.
DeSantis said current policies between the United States and China have created what he calls an abusive relationship. In an interview with ABC News, Vice President Kamala Harris doubled down on her position that new education standards in Florida are aiming to rewrite Black history.
I don't think that this is subject to any ideological debate to say that people who were enslaved did not benefit from slavery, period.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has accused Democrats of lying about the state's educational guidelines, while other Black conservatives are criticizing the standards, including Republican South Carolina senator and presidential hopeful Tim Scott, who said there's no silver lining in slavery. Following Hunter Biden's former business associate Devin Archer's closed testimony on Monday, Democratic Representative of New York Dan Goldman said Archer stated Hunter would put President Biden on the phone with business associates in the past, but discuss no business dealings.
They never once spoke about any business dealings. As he described it, it was all casual conversation.
Archer told lawmakers that Hunter would frequently answer his father's phone calls during business meetings. This comes as Republicans continue to push for President Biden to be impeached by attempting to link him to his son's business transactions. Lawmakers continue to battle it out as government spending takes center stage as Congress has until the end of the year to pass an appropriations package. Last week, Democratic Missouri Representative Cori Bush had harsh words for Republicans as House Majority Leader Steve Scalise took to the floor to praise the passage of legislation which allocates funding for military construction.
If both sides won't, we still will do that work. And I would yield one more time to the gentlelady.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our ATRUST indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. The head of the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, known as CISA, spoke July 25th to state election directors, announcing an investment in new regional staff helping states protect their elections. She also cited artificial intelligence as an emerging threat. CISA Director Jen Easterly is a West Point graduate and Oxford Rhodes Scholar who retired as a lieutenant colonel from the U.S. Cyber Command after 20 years of service. She received 2 Bronze Stars and was later nominated by President Biden for the CISA post in 2021. Easterly told election directors that the difference in cybersecurity for elections was, quote, night and day compared with 2016, and that information sharing of intelligence on emerging threats to elections would continue to be at the core of CISA's mission. Easterly told the Associated Press that she sees artificial intelligence in the hands of bad actors as a concern, but that she has confidence in the security of the 2024 election itself. Easterly noted that CISA is adding additional regional security advisors to consult with states and municipalities and said at the end of her speech, "As we know, elections are the golden thread that runs through our democracy. Election security is not a partisan issue. Rather, it is an issue of preserving that foundational fabric of our democracy." We have a link to her speech and to the CISA website at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Thursday, July 27th, leaders from the environmental organizations Beyond Plastic, Greenpeace, and others delivered more than 27,000 signatures to the United States Environmental Protection Agency in Washington, D.C., calling for a ban of vinyl chloride, the group's then met with Michael Friedhoff, Assistant Administrator in the EPA Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention. We hear first from Heather McKeer-Tony of Beyond Petrochemicals, followed by Daniel Wilston of River Valley Organizing, Chris Walton of the Hip Hop Caucus, Judith Anker of Beyond Plastics, and Jessica Kennard, a resident of East Palestine, Ohio.
I'd like to thank Beyond Plastics for bringing Beyond Petrochemicals, Plastic Free Future, River Valley Organizing, Clean Air Force, Greenpeace, Hip Hop Caucus, and residents of East Palestine to the steps of EPA to deliver over 27,000 signed petitions calling for toxic vinyl chloride to be banned. And it goes without saying, it's a little warm out here today, and you can thank some of the plastic and chemical production for that, because chemical production actually adds to global climate emissions. In fact, the petrochemical industry is right now responsible for 10% of global climate emissions, and that's only growing. So addressing this is helping us to try to keep things cooler. Try as you may, if you need a fan a little bit, it's all right. We recognize how warm it is. But this is also part of why we're out here today. Vinyl chloride is a known human carcinogen and petrochemical, and it's used mostly for making PVC plastic. It can cause liver damage as well as cancer in the liver, brain, lungs, and blood. And as the world is transitioning towards clean, renewable energy, the oil and gas industry is trying to figure out where they fit in. And they're putting their emphasis towards petrochemicals in order to keep a polluting industry profitable. And all of this is happening while impacting the most vulnerable among us, the most vulnerable communities, particularly situated in the Ohio River Valley region, the south of Louisiana, a place a lot of folks know as Cancer Alley, but we're going to rename that to like Climate Advocacy Alley. And also into the Houston Shipping Channel and South Texas area. But we're not going to allow that to continue to create sacrifice zones in places where we know communities want and need and deserve a clean, reliable future. That's why we're here today to speak with Administrator Friedhoff to demand better regulations. Now, we are approaching 6 months between the East Palestine train derailment and the explosive burn-off of 100,000 gallons of vinyl chloride, and today. It was February 3rd that took place, and that accident was a chilling warning that we must act now to ban petrochemicals like vinyl chloride and keep communities safe from cancer, from known carcinogens, and really move towards what we know is a reliable, sustainable, clean future. I want to introduce to you now someone very special, someone who is coming not only from this space, but also, like myself, is a parent and who's concerned about the future of their community. Daniel Winston is co-executive director of River Valley Organizing in East Palestine, Ohio. He lives 17 miles away from that February 3rd incident, and his organization is working to empower those who are most affected by issues of environmental injustice. And they work for power building solutions, particularly in communities of color and vulnerable populations.
I just want to say thank you for everyone coming out. This is important. As a dad, my 7-year-old is right here. His name is David. This is something that's very important to me, because if we don't fight this now, then my son is going to fight this in his future. And if he doesn't get to fight this in his future, then my grandchildren are going to have to fight this and keep going through this.
Hello, everybody. My name is Chris Walton, Policy Director for the Hip Hop Caucus. Our overall message today is that the EPA should use its existing authority to severely curb, if not cease, the production and transportation of vinyl chloride. Recognizing that it is releasing into the air and water, it is a significant health hazard. The EPA has already declared vinyl chloride a carcinogen. Why wait? If we know this is a carcinogen, ban it.
Judith Inc. is founder and president of Beyond Plastics and is professor at Bennington College. Prior to that, she was appointed by President Obama to serve as regional administrator for EPA in Region 2. And she's going to discuss the vinyl chloride health concerns and what EPA can do. We are dead serious about convincing EPA to ban vinyl chloride. 27,570 people from all over the country